G'day, and welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast. I'm your host, Graham Curry, from Perth, Australia. I lost 60 kilos or 132 pounds living an intermittent fasting lifestyle and have successfully maintained that weight loss now for over a year. I wanted to bring this series of podcasts to you to give you an insight into what that journey has been like. I also wanted to give you some information about intermittent fasting, talk to people that are doing it, and bring in some experts in the field, including some leading authors of some great books about the subject. Talk about the highs, the lows, the triumphs, the celebrations, the negatives, the positives, and everything in between. Nothing is a silver bullet, as they say, but intermittent fasting is about the closest thing that you can get to a perfect health plan with a side effect of weight loss. So sit back in the next few weeks and enjoy life on the fasting highway with us. Thank you. G'day, and welcome to the Fasting Highway, and this is episode 8. So today I have with me Jin Stevens, the New York Times best-selling author of Fast, Feast, Repeat, the comprehensive guide to Delay, Don't Deny, Intermittent Fasting. Delay, Don't Deny was also the name of Jin's first book and is the name of her wildly successful Facebook groups. And Jin herself lost 80 pounds living an intermittent fasting lifestyle and has become one of the preeminent experts on the subject. So here to join us today to talk a bit about her own journey with intermittent fasting, the books, and to give us some great insights is Jin Stevens. And welcome to the podcast, Jin, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here, and I would not miss it for the world, Graham. I'm thrilled that you are doing a podcast and really glad that you asked me.
Oh, thanks, Jin. So, Jin, first question, how has 2020 been for you? Pretty crazy times, huh?
You know, 2020 is going to go down as totally crazy, but it's also been a fabulous year for me in so many ways because, you know, it's the year I had a New York Times bestseller. So,
absolutely.
You know, what's the quote from that book? It's, these are the best of times. These were the worst of times. I'm not even sure what book that's from. Is it War and Peace? I don't even know.
Wow. So let's talk about the book, Jin, Fast, Feast, Repeat. Tell us all about it and how's it going?
Well, I am so proud of that book. It really is the book that I wanted to write. It turned out exactly like I wanted it to. Sometimes, actually, when I was reading it for Audible, I was like, man, I did a really good job with this book. So that made me really proud to read the whole thing out loud and, you know, take the time to really think about how it flowed together. You know, I've been in the intermittent fasting community off and on since I started dabbling with intermittent fasting way back in 2009. So it's about 11 years that I've been, you know, I went from dabbler to someone who used it as a lifestyle to now, you know, dare I say, you know, intermittent fasting expert, really from the practical side of things. You know, I'm not a scientist, you know that about me, but I'm somebody who has made intermittent fasting work for me and my lifestyle and would never live another way. And so fortunately, you know, my training as a teacher and my work, you know, throughout my career is being able to, you know, write lessons and present information to others really helped me write the book Fast, Feast, Repeat, because I thought about it like, okay, I'm a teacher and it is my job to present this information, you know, everything I learned myself through living an intermittent fasting lifestyle, through having these very large Facebook support groups from all around the world with over 400,000, approaching 500,000
amazing
members from around the world. It is amazing. And I can't even hardly say those numbers without, you know, just being just amazed and so grateful for this huge community that we're a part of. But, you know, all the lessons that I've learned from reading the science, digging into the journals, but also the practical applications. And I think that's what sets me apart from so many other people is that, you know, I've watched literally hundreds of thousands of people begin an intermittent fasting lifestyle. I know what the struggles are. I know, you know, what the common pitfalls are, and I know what you can do to really have your best chance of success and turning it into a lifestyle, you know, the mindset piece that's so important. That's my favorite chapter of the whole book, by the way, the mindset chapter. But really, I think that, you know, I wanted to write the book that anyone could just start with. If it's your first day of intermittent fasting, you could read Fast, Feast, Repeat and be well equipped to make it a successful lifestyle. But also someone who'd been dabbling with intermittent fasting as long as I had and had been living it as a lifestyle, you would still learn new things as a experienced intermittent faster. And I think that that all of that came true.
Yeah, I think that's great, Jen, and it's a fantastic read. And it really is the A to Z of intermittent fasting, and I think it will be known as that as we go forward. And anybody now that asks me about intermittent fasting, straight away I just say, look, don't even waste your time Googling and searching and doing all that. Just spend the $25 or whatever it is, go on to Amazon and get Fast, Feast, Repeat. And every answer you've always wanted to know about intermittent fasting is in there. Because I was trying to think the other day, what isn't in there? And I couldn't think of it.
Good. You know, the there's like a couple of questions I didn't put in there because they were a little racy. And they're just sometimes people ask things like, do certain bedroom activities break the fast? Yeah, I chose not to put that in Fast, Feast, Repeat, but literally every other question that we get from day to day, you know, because I've been running these Facebook groups since 2015, so it's been over 5 years now. We have literally heard it all. Any question you could think of, we have gotten it.
Yeah, so Jen, with the new book, is it now worldwide, or what's the story with the distribution for people listening out there around the world?
That's a great question. When it first, when we first sold the rights to the book, when St. Martin's Press, which is a division of Macmillan, bought the book in 2019, before I even had written it. That's a little known fact, by the way. People may not know that when you're writing nonfiction, you don't write the book till after you sell it. You sell it, then you have to write it. So yeah. They initially, the contract was for just the North American rights. So that would be, of course, you know, North America. So people all around the world that wanted to have access to Fast, Feast, Repeat had to order it from a U.S.-based or North American-based distributor of books. You know, things like The Book Depository, other companies that work that way. But recently, you know, instead of trying to sell them the worldwide rights, I just said, look, I want this book everywhere. You have my permission. Just sell it. Everywhere that that people want to read it, you know. So all of the English rights have now been, I just granted them to St. Martin's Press. So hopefully, you know, I know people couldn't get the Audible version. They couldn't get the eBooks because you can't get those, you know, unless you lived in North America. But hopefully everyone around the world that wants the book can now, you know, get it through Audible, through the eBooks, and also you should be able to order it through, you know, booksellers wherever you live. Also, yeah. We're working on foreign language translations. You know, there's a Spanish edition in the works, which is really exciting. I think Italian. It's hard to even keep up.
Oh, that's fantastic, Jen. And I know here in Australia, for Australian listeners, we have a reseller called Kogan. That's K-O-G-A-N, who's mm-hmm. a major reseller here, who I noticed listed your book. And I've been getting regular emails about it, actually. And the other one is Angus and Robertson here in Australia, which is an online bookseller. So in the United States, Jen, can you buy it in like bookshops and Costco and places like that?
Well, that's really what's so exciting about this whole process. You know, my first book, Delay Don't Deny, which has sold very, very well since 2016. It's been a solid seller. But really, you know, we needed new information, which is why I wrote Fast, Feast, Repeat. It's really everything, you know, that we needed to have in an updated book. But because my first book was self-published, it's not available anywhere in paperback except Amazon. So one reason that I decided to go with a traditional publisher, you know, I could have released the, you know, Fast, Feast, Repeat the same way, self-published through Amazon. But I want to see it in regular bookstores. So, you know, we've got it in Barnes & Noble. It's coming to Target in America in November, which is very exciting because apparently Target is a tough nut to crack, getting a book in Target. So it's going to be in there in November. It's in Costco in Canada. The United States Costco is still not decided yet, but very exciting. Seeing, yeah. And, you know, someone sent me pictures from Books A Million. It's in there. You know, it's in my local Barnes & Noble. I actually went in and I'm like, hey, can I sign these? And the girl at the customer service was like, I don't know, let me check with the manager. I'm like, okay. I had to get permission from the manager.
Well, we have Target down here too, Jen. And,
well, I would love to see it there.
I would love to see you down here. Are you ever going to come down to Australia? That was another question I had. And you travel.
Well, you know,
when you can,
I would love to. I would love to. I've never traveled overseas anywhere. Like the farthest I've been away from home is like the Caribbean and Mexico and places, you know, those islands down there near Mexico and the Bahamas, that sort of thing, like Grand Turk. I've never flown overseas. And I would love to come all around the world. One thing that's interesting is that publishers nowadays do not send their authors on book tours. Even, you know, I had an offer to come to somewhere here in the United States. I'm like, someone wants to have a book signing. They want to have an event. Will you pay to send me? And my publisher said, nope.
Yep.
I'm like, okay, then. So, you know, maybe one day I'll travel that way. I would sure like to, just, you know, as a person who wants to travel. And while I'm there, I would love to do some events. So stay tuned. First, my husband has to retire because I really want to explore the world with him. He's got a couple of more years with his university career, and then he can retire and start drawing retirement.
Oh, then it's not the that sky's far the down limit. Here.
It's really, yeah. Oh, yeah, no, it'll only take what? How many hours would it take to fly there?
About 16 or 18. It's a quick trip.
That's a long way. My daughter-in-law spent a semester abroad in New Zealand and Australia, and she loved it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. But I'm so bummed out. As you know, I was meant to come up to see you guys on the cruise and out of Charleston this year. Then that got scrapped, of course, because of COVID. And we were so disappointed. I was so looking forward to meeting you in person. I know I've got to know you quite well, and I consider you a friend from the groups now. And I was just thinking, wow, this is so great. I'm going to meet Jen and the rest of the crew. And then, bang, that happened. But
I know. That was so disappointing. So disappointing for me because I was so looking forward. You know, it was going to be such a big event. You know, you coming all the way from New Zealand. And I just was very sad. The having to cancel the cruise was just really the worst part of 2020.
Yeah.
For me. I mean, I know there have been terrible parts of 2020. So people might say, canceling a cruise, how could that? But, you know, in my life so far in 2020, that was the biggest blow because I was looking forward to meeting so many people that I, like you and your wife. And
yeah,
we will travel again. We will travel again. Pandemics don't last forever.
No, they don't. Jen, I just want to strip it back to your first book, Delay, Don't Deny, which was how I discovered intermittent fasting. And one Sunday afternoon, just Googling around, I stumbled onto your groups and then I eventually got the book and it just convinced me straight away to take up this lifestyle. And I was just wondering, what came first, the book or the Facebook group? I can't remember.
Oh, it was totally the Facebook group. And the first Facebook group I started in 2015, it was the One Meal a Day group, which is now closed to new members because I'm focusing new members in the Delay Don't Deny group. But the One Meal a Day group that started in 2015 started to grow. I really just started it for me and my friends. I wasn't trying to start a worldwide movement. I wanted a Facebook support group where I could talk about my struggles, almost like an online journal kind of a place where I could say, here's what's going on with me today. How are y'all doing? We could share our struggles and our celebrations. And it was really just me and my friends. But then people started joining that I didn't know. And I was like, wait, who are these people joining? Well, okay, come and join. So, you know, think way back to 2015, the obesity code hadn't even come out yet. We didn't know. There was so much we didn't know. So, you know, nice. Our group started to grow and people started to, you know, stumble in from wherever they were. And so we had a pinned post and we directed everyone to read the pinned post, but it kept getting longer and longer and longer. Like, you know, don't use diet soda and don't put cream in your coffee. And here's why. And this is how we define one meal a day. And and it just kept getting longer and longer and longer and longer. And also people kept asking, what should I read? What book should I read to really know how to start? And I was like, well, you know, Dr. Bert Hearing, I love him. His book, The Fast Five, is great, but ignore what he says about, you know, diet sodas because we've learned more now. We don't think that's good. or, you know, the obesity code is fabulous, but it doesn't really tell you anything about the eating window approach or time restricted eating. So, you know, here's some other information. And I was like, you know, there really just needs to be a book. You know, that's me as the teacher.
Yeah.
I wanted to write something that I could hand to a friend and say, just read this. This is what you need to get started. And I purposefully didn't, you know, tell everyone exactly what they had to do, because you and I both know intermittent fasting is so very personal. And also it changes as you become an experienced intermittent faster, the approach that feels right to you may be different from mine. So this is really not a one size fits all. But, you know, that's where Delayed on Deny started, way back at the very end of 2016. I hit that publish to Amazon button and there it was. And here's a funny story. I don't know if I've ever told this on the air. Right after I published it, it was, you know, going strong on Amazon. And by that, I mean, it was selling like 100 books a day at first, you know, and the people in my groups that were buying it. And I have a friend, I taught two of her children, and she has a brother-in-law that works for Amazon in, I don't know, something to do with Kindle books. I'm not sure what he does, but he called her and they were talking about just different things, and they were, you know, the products, things that were selling. And he's like, there's some book that's really gotten everybody's attention here at Amazon because it's some teacher wrote it. She's like, I know her. I mean, this was after it had been on the market for like a week. And I'm like, that just was, it gave me a thrill to think that they were talking about it at Amazon. It had gotten their attention, wow, you know, 1 week after it had been published. And I'm like, you know, I may be onto something with this book.
Yeah, because
who even knew, right?
It's not the only book you've written as well, Jen. And you went on to write more books, including Feast Without Fear. Can you just tell us a bit about that one?
I sure can. That book I'm so proud of. And I don't talk about it as much. Just because it's not a book about intermittent fasting. And the reason I wrote Feast Without Fear is because in the early days of the Facebook groups, we had a lot more diet wars going on. And by that, I mean people who were convinced that the way they were eating was exactly the right way to eat, and anybody who didn't eat like that was wrong. For an example, you know, I referred to the obesity code, and a lot of people came to intermittent fasting through the low carb and keto community. And there was some kind of, you know, thought that low carb was, quote, best or better, or you had to do low carb with intermittent fasting. And then we have, you know, vegetarians who are like, no, I don't eat meat and I do great. And so I was like, well, how can, you know, we read all these journal articles and hear all these doctors promote, you know, don't eat meat, eat only meat, eat mostly meat, eat high fat. And how can there be all this conflicting advice? So I started to dig in. And what really changed everything for me, I talked about this also in Fast, Feast, Repeat, was a YouTube video of a TED Talk, Dr. Aaron Segal talking about his research on personalized nutrition. And, you know, we've all heard of the glycemic index. And it's got numbers assigned to foods. Like we all know, you know, white bread has a certain number, and that's based on how much it raises your blood glucose. And we all just assume that that's, you know, those numbers are set in stone. But this TED Talk, I think it's called What is the Best Diet for Humans? Dr. Aaron Segal on YouTube, he started talking about the research that we are all unique in our glycemic response. White bread might give you a different glycemic response than it gives me. You know, ice cream may give someone a huge glycemic spike. You know, their blood glucose goes way up, where someone else might not have a blip at all. And so the whole idea that we're different when it comes to what foods do within our bodies, you know, why is that? So I started to go down those rabbit holes. You know, it has to do with our gut microbiome. We've only known about the different things that live in our, you know, the different species, what's the word I'm looking for? The different types of gut bacteria that live in our gut microbiome really for just over a decade now, because before they couldn't really sequence what was there. But then as the science got better, they were able to see, oh my gosh, we've got a lot of things in this population, more than we knew. And they started realizing that certain gut profiles were linked to a lean metabolic profile, whereas other gut profiles were linked to obesity. And so, you know, really for someone who has struggled and struggled and struggled and felt like they've done everything right, it really could just come down to your gut microbiome health being askew or out of whack. So also genetics plays a factor, not as big as the gut microbiome, but there's definitely a genetic factor in there. So I wrote Feast Without Fear to teach people that you do not need to find a diet book with a diet guru who says, this is the best way to eat. Instead, you can learn to trust your own body and the way you feel. And you can realize, you know, maybe if you know that a lower carb way of eating makes you feel great and it's always worked for you before, that's your body telling you, hey, you know, certain foods don't work well for you. But my job, I feel like my mission in life is to empower everyone to take back the control. I'm not going to tell you what to eat. I'm not going to tell you when to eat it. I am going to tell you how to fast clean because I think that's important. But yep. Fast clean and then design the eating approach and intermittent fasting lifestyle that serves your body and your health. What's also so cool is I'm right this minute. You remember in Fast, Feast, Repeat, I talked about the Predict 2 study
yep.
that they were doing. I am actually right this minute wearing a sensor for my continuous glucose monitor because I'm taking part in the Predict 3 study with Dr. Tim Spector's group out of the UK. And I'm so excited. I'm going to be tracking what I'm eating for the next week and seeing what it does to my blood glucose levels. And, you know, like last night I had a meal of white rice, black beans, tomato, peppers, sour cream and cheese. My blood glucose was fabulous after that. It only went up to 113 after having a meal of white rice and wow. beans. I know. I knew that beans and rice worked well for me. I knew it instinctively, but I got to see it right there on the glucose monitor. I did find that coconut water did not work very well for me. My blood glucose spiked up to 135 after drinking a glass of that. But you know, learning what foods really work well for me is a great next step. And I'm thrilled to see this research coming out there because, you know, Fast, Feast, Repeat talks about this, but Feast Without Fear goes deeper. So anybody who's interested, read Feast Without Fear. I'm sure you'll learn something new and realize the science is still unfolding.
Yeah.
You know, as I mentioned, because I'm doing it. The science is unfolding now.
All I can say is, Jen, anything with your name on that's a written book about this way of life, I would be running and buying it, and I can fully endorse that. And when people say books don't change lives, well, all I can say is that your first book, Delay, Don't Deny, certainly changed mine, and it changed it for the better. And I know when I read the message in Feast Without Fear, that was something I struggled with a little bit early on in my journey, like uh-huh. learning how to just go out and enjoy my food without thinking, oh my God, I'm going to, you know, put on 2 pounds or whatever if I have this dessert. And I spoke about it in episode one of this podcast with my wife about the dessert incident. After a few months of fasting, we went out and I had a dessert and I had a complete meltdown because I just thought I'd ruined everything. And so, Jen, the other thing I wanted to talk to you about, people know you as an author or best-selling author now, but also a lot of people may not know about your own struggles with obesity. Can you just touch on that for a few minutes?
I sure can. And, you know, I have lost over 80 pounds and have kept it off now. I hit my initial goal in 2015. So it's been over 5 years. And, you know, you just talked about this, Graham, how you were so worried that that one dessert was going to ruin everything because you have a diet history like I do of going up and down and up and down, right?
Yep.
Always losing the weight or some of the weight, but always immediately, as soon as I would hit, I mean, this is in the past before intermittent fasting, but you know, in the past, in those years where I struggled, I would hit goal and then immediately it was like, you know, the letter V, you know, my weight would go down, down, down to that low point and then right back up again on the V, or, you know, the yo-yo that we call it, down and then all the way back up and always even higher than it had been before. I had never in my adult life been able to maintain in a range where my clothes fit the same from season to season. until now.
That's
which
fantastic.
I know it has been over 5 years, and the only time my clothes have not fit over those 5 years and I had to get new clothes is when I had to get smaller clothes over maintenance, which has been astonishing. You know, the clothes that fit me when I hit my initial goal in 2015 are not the clothes I'm wearing now in 2020. The clothes I'm wearing now are smaller than my initial goal clothes. And, you know, that never happens. The research on weight loss and then maintenance, you know, the percentage of people who are able to lose the weight they need to lose and then maintain it, it's a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of people that are able to lose and maintain even 10% of their starting weight. So, you know, that's why intermittent fasting is different. But all those years that I struggled, you know, I had what I like to call diet brain. And I talk about this in Fast, Feast, Repeat. I was always looking for that next diet. I could be on a diet still looking for the next diet, you know, this way to eat that was going to be the magical way for me. And I really thought at that time that it was the food. You know, like if I just didn't eat dairy, or if I just never had dessert again, or if I, you know, fill in the blank. And so I would, a new diet book would come out. I would read it. I would try it. You know, it was like that diet roller coaster jumping from thing to thing. And I really just wanted to live my life with freedom. I didn't want to count anything. I didn't want to count calories. I didn't want to restrict foods that I love. So intermittent fasting really spoke to me when I first heard about it in 2009, but I wasn't equipped at that time with enough understanding. And honestly, the science really, we weren't at the point in 2009 when really anyone understood. I mean, maybe there were some scientists who understood it, but it hadn't yet been communicated with the general population in a way so that we could know how to apply it and really make it a lifestyle. Like, I didn't know about being fat adapted from intermittent fasting, and I didn't know that it would take your body a long time to learn how to tap into fat stores. I didn't know you wanted to keep your insulin low. You know, I was drinking diet sodas all the time in those early days. I didn't know any of those things. So I just kept struggling and kept struggling, but I was committed and I was like, I'm going to figure this out. And, you know, people who have never struggled with their weight, like my husband, you know, they watch people like you and like me as we struggle and they just think, you know, just eat less and move more, you know, and they mean well, they're like, come on, it's not that hard. Just don't eat all as much as you're eating. But the body is complicated. Our hormones are complicated. You know, the science of why intermittent fasting is so superior to low calorie dieting is once you understand it, you're like, oh, you understand why you failed and struggled for all those years. You understand it was your body fighting back against the low calorie dieting. But, you know, thank goodness to intermittent fasting, because I have been struggle free. And I'm not going to say that every moment has been without struggle. That's not true. But I have not had to fight with my body. I now understand that my body and I are working together. We're on the same team. And I understand the choices that I make and how they impact the function of my body and the way that I feel. Like, I don't know if, did you see my post in the advanced group last week or this week about alcohol? Did you see that one?
I did, yeah. That's,
you know, really I have come to the realization that alcohol really doesn't work well for my body. And but it has to do with, yeah, are you the same way?
Yeah, beer especially.
Yeah. And I didn't really understand why until I had this aha moment. I've been testing my breath ketones. I got a little device, and I'm not a big fan of people, you know, worrying about ketones because, you know, that can lead to overstressing. You know, this is supposed to be a simple lifestyle. But I got a device sent to me for free. So I was playing around with it. And I noticed that when I would have a glass of wine, my ketone levels would be down for days after having it. I'm like, what's going on here? So I dug into my DNA analysis and realized I am a slow alcohol metabolizer. So apparently my liver takes a long time to process alcohol or whatever, but it keeps me from really tapping into my stored fat, from producing ketones for whatever reason, for days. So I recently had a whole month alcohol free. And, you know, for people who have read Delay Don't Deny, I was having a glass of Prosecco with dinner every night. But man, after going alcohol free for a month, I felt so much better, sleeping better. The ketones are up. So I'm not going to be, I'm not the person who's going to say I will never have a glass of Prosecco. I will never drink again. But it's certainly no longer a part of my day-to-day just living.
Yeah, I think that's important too, that you don't say you're never going to do something, because
Right.
there's always that special occasion where it might be charge a glass or something like that with some bubbles. But Jen, what I wanted to know too, and a lot of people probably out there are thinking, is when you first started intermittent fasting, what fasting protocol were you doing, and what did your window look like in terms of food?
Well, that's a great question. In those years from 2009 to 2014, when I was stumbling around and trying to make something stick and it never did, I went between it, depending on really how I was feeling at the time. Dr. Bert Hearing's Fast Five protocol really appealed to me, 5 hour daily eating window, because just the idea of anything shorter than 5 hours just seemed, way too short. Really, no one was even talking about doing anything shorter than 5 hours. He had that. There was, 16:8. So really that was it. Oh, and people were also 24. They were calling that the warrior diet because Ori Hofmeckler had written that, and he had a loose, 4 hour window. So those were the protocols. But then we also had the alternate daily fasting protocols. There was Dr. Johnson had one that was is up and down day, and it was really just calorie cycling when you go back and really look at it. It really wasn't completely fasting, but it was more of a calorie cycling approach, but you were having, your down days and your up days. And so I would try that for a while. And then Krista Verity's book, The Every Other Day Diet, which was alternate daily fasting, also really very calorie cycling in those early days. But I would try all of those, experimenting with them. Brad Pilon, he is a bodybuilder. He had Eat Stop Eat, where you would do a 24-hour fast a couple times a week and then just, quote, eat normally. By the way, things like that, 16:8, Eat Stop Eat, where you ate normally most of the time and just had a couple, those did not work for me because my eating normally was I really that did not work. Fast Five was the one that really stuck in 2014 when I really was just like, here we go. The 5 hour daily eating window was the one that I was really able to stick to. And over time, I tweaked it and tried different things and the up and down day approach here and there. But really, Fast Five, that's the
So
one.
that was like a 19 and 5,
19
was it?
and five. Yeah,
Yeah.
19, five. And now I don't time anything. I don't count hours even. I just open my window. Here's what's funny, Graham. Now that I am not drinking wine with dinner, my window is naturally closing at 7 p.m., which is funny. Like I might open my window at 3, and then like after I eat dinner, I'm done because I'm not finishing up that glass of wine. And then, after I had a glass of wine, I needed a little something snack to close my window. So, it's astonishing how just not having wine with dinner has naturally shortened the length of my window.
Yeah. And so, Jen, in that sort of first year when you were doing intermittent fasting, with that 19 and 5, what about exercise? Was that something you did a lot of?
Oh gosh, no. I pretty much did nothing during
Yeah.
that
Join
first year.
the club.
I did no exercise at all the first year. And really, when I talked in Delayed on Deny about my vibration plate and the hula hooping that I was doing at that time in 2016, that was over a year into maintenance. And it was just because I wanted to work on my muscle mass, and I was no longer trying to lose weight at that time. So I really didn't bring in an exercise protocol until and it was still even then. I mean, standing on the vibration plate, I'm sure gym people would laugh at me thinking that's what, but I love my vibration plate, and I find that it really does help support, muscle mass. And there's research that shows it does a lot of great things for us. Anybody who's interested in reading more about that, if you go to the favorite things tab of jenstevens.com, that's GIN Stevens with a PH.com, I have links to the vibration plate that I use, plus the science. They're doing some research right here in Augusta at our local medical school. They're doing some research on vibration plates and gut health, and it's good for us in so many ways. But yeah, the first, you know, when I was losing the weight, I lost over 80 pounds with no exercise along the way. Now, sometimes people misunderstand what I'm saying and think that I am actively recommending that you not exercise. And nothing could be farther from the truth. I'm not saying that at all. Exercise is important to us staying active. You know, while I said I didn't exercise, I've always been very, very active, just as a part of, you know, I was a teacher on my feet all day long. So, you know, I didn't go to the gym, but I walked around my classroom all day, every day. I walked down the halls. I lifted paper boxes. I, you know, climbed up and got things off high shelves. You know, yeah. I was not sitting there like a couch potato at all. And so that's important. You know, they're also, like I mentioned, that genetically we're different when it comes to what foods work for us. We're also genetically different when it comes to what types of exercise we may be best suited for. My DNA analysis had a little section that said may be less likely to lose weight due to exercise. Like, some people know if they want to lose weight, they need to up their exercise. They probably have a different DNA profile than I do.
Yeah,
whereas mine are not linked.
My theory about exercise, Jen, was when I was very obese, exercise for me was a drag. And every time I tried a diet and it involved exercise, I just gave up because it was so hard carrying that much weight around. And
just walking was exercise. You know, you were moving. How much weight did you lose, Graham?
132 pounds.
Okay. So, you know, let's imagine that right now you picked up a barbell of, did you say 132?
Yes.
If you picked up a barbell with 132 pounds and tried to carry that around, how much exercise would that be? That would be a lot.
It would. But what happened was once I actually started losing most of the weight and I got towards the tail end of that, I started walking a fair bit, which I was, and then that was getting longer. And then I took up sort of rowing. I got myself a rowing machine. And then I can't swim. Well, I couldn't swim, Jen. And I went down to our local Olympic pool. And I was so embarrassed I couldn't swim half a lap. And within about 6 months after a bit of training, I was doing 30 laps of an Olympic pool, fully fasted, with so much energy. I was just highballing. And I started to love exercise. And so now, most days now I'm maintaining, and I've been maintaining over a year now, and my weight's been in a range of about 2 to 4 pounds. And so intermittent fasting for me is so sustainable over a long period of time. And everything else I tried in my life, Jen, it just didn't work. And that's what I love about intermittent fasting, the sustainability of it.
Yeah, and that you're maintaining within that 2 to 4 pound range. And I would bet you had never done that before for any period of time.
Never.
Me neither.
I was always a bouncer, a bit like you, Jen. But
yep.
Jen, well, the other thing I wanted to ask you about maintenance is, are you still sort of running the same plan now as what you did? And when you did get to sort of that 80-pound loss and you found the set point, can we talk about the set point for a minute and what that actually means?
We can. And, you know, set point is a theory, the set point, the weight set point theory. And, you know, the science is a little murky when you start looking into it. We're not like, you know, here's exactly what the weight set point is and here's how to change your set point. So based on the evidence we have, if you can maintain within a certain range, it's like your body accepts that new weight as your set point. And that's the weight that your body tries to maintain. Now, you can change your set point up, you can change it down. You know, the bazillion dollar question is, you know, how do you change it down and keep it down? And if anybody could answer that in a way, it's like, here's exactly what you do, they would be a bazillionaire, right?
Yeah.
I actually think, though, intermittent fasting is our best bet because I feel like my weight set point is right here where I am now. Because, you know, if I eat more, if I overeat, I can actually feel my body temperature cranking up. You know, overfeeding, we have lots of research on overfeeding. And that means, you know, the scientists were purposefully feeding people more calories, more energy than they needed to maintain their weight. And then what happens? And I actually talked about one study that they did with twins. I talked about it in Feast Without Fear. So they had these sets of twins and they figured out their, you know, metabolic rate of, you know, maintenance. And then they overfed them by a certain number of calories every day. And, you know, we've all heard calories in, calories out. It's all math. And some people still believe it, although I don't know how they still do after the research that I've done. There's so many flaws to that. But you would expect, based on the math, everyone would have gained the exact same amount of weight because they overfed them by a certain amount. You know, and if a calorie is a calorie is a calorie, they all would have gained exactly the same amount of weight over the period of time. But that's not what happened. Some people, their metabolic rate, some of the twins, their metabolic rates really, you know, soared with this overfeeding and they gained way less than expected. Whereas some of the poor twin sets, they actually gained more than mathematically predicted. And it all has, it depends on your body, you know, your gut microbiome. If you change that, it changes how your body, you know, quote, uses the calories, you know, that you're taking in. Some people can actually extract more energy out of the same number of calories. That doesn't seem fair, does it?
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't. So, you know, our bodies are so complicated. So applying this to maintenance for me, you know, my very best tool has been honesty pants. And I talk about this in my books. It's having clothes that are unforgiving. And you put them on, and when they're tight, you're like, okay, time to reel things in. You know, I have not weighed myself to the point, you know, like knowing my scale number since, was it 2017, I think is when I threw my scale away. And I haven't gotten on a scale and seen a number since then.
So, Jen, I was going to ask you about the scale. And I know that you just, or you can talk about it and in terms of weighing and then taking the average weekly.
Right. I'm a big fan of that because, you know, I can't remember what book I read it in. I did not invent the daily weighing with weekly averaging, and I just can't remember where I read it. But in 2014, when I went back to intermittent fasting for good and it finally stuck, that was also the first time that I started weighing daily and then once a week calculating a weekly average. And for the first time ever, I was able to see that even though my weight fluctuated a great bit from day to day, week to week, my average was going down. Now, this is not the same thing as weighing weekly. And I really explore this in Fast, Feast, Repeat with lots of examples. But if I had only weighed, for example, on Friday, if I had only weighed once a week on Friday, there were weeks that my Friday to Friday weight was up, looking at all this data that I have from 2014. But my weekly average was down. Because, you know, my weight fluctuates a great bit from day to day. You know, water weight, you know, women, we have a lot of monthly fluctuations, understanding all of that. So, you know, if I had been weighing once a week, gotten on the scale, and my Friday weight was up 2 pounds from the Friday before, that's when you say, oh, this doesn't work, I quit. And you would stop and then look for that next best thing. But because I could see that my weekly average was indeed trending downward, I was like, okay, these fluctuations are irrelevant. The only thing that matters is the overall trend. So I weighed daily and calculated a weekly average for the whole time I was losing weight and for my first year of maintenance.
Yeah. What about, Jen, when we go on scales and we get a big drop, we call that the whoosh. And I know you have a theory around this. Can you talk about that?
Well, you know, it came from a blog called, if you Google Of Whooshes and Squishy Fat, I think that's the name of the blog post. And it's an old blog post. But the guy who wrote that blog post, he has a theory that I've not been able to back up scientifically. But his theory is that we retain water in our fat cells as we're losing fat. And so as your body releases fat from the fat cells, water goes into your fat cells to take the place, to hold the shape of the fat cell. And then eventually, you may notice that your fat is starting to get squishy and feel different, and your weight may even be going up on the scale. But then all of a sudden, whoosh, you release a lot of water weight, and your weight goes down by several pounds all at once. Yeah. Now, I believe the whoosh is real, that we retain water somewhere in our bodies as we're, you know, part of the fat loss process, and then we whoosh it out. I'm not convinced that it's happening within the fat cells. I've actually seen some scientists who are like, that's ridiculous. That is not what happens. Your fat cells are definitely not putting water in them. But, you know, I've not been able to verify that that's what's happening. My hunch is that it's happening in the lymph system. You know, our lymph systems, the lymphatic system is like our body's sewer, honestly. It handles a lot of waste. We don't talk about it a lot, but you know, you've heard of people having like lymphedema where they swell up, their bodies, you know, puff up a lot, and they have a lot of fluid retention. I actually think that what's happening, you know, as our fat stores release fat, it also releases toxins that have been stored in those fat cells. And so our bodies have to do something with them. So it might stick them in the lymph system, in that fluid management, and then all of a sudden whoosh them out. Now, have I found science to show that that's what's happening? No, that's also a theory. So hopefully one day that would be cool to find out that's exactly what's happening. But wherever the body is storing the water, it definitely happens to a lot of people. They retain the water, then all of a sudden, whoosh, they whoosh it out. Now, some people then worry. They're like, well, I don't have whooshes. What's wrong with me? Nothing. Nothing's wrong with you. Yeah. Maybe your body isn't holding onto water for whatever reason. You know, there's no wrong way or right way that this process is going to look. But knowing your pattern over time, you know, some people find they just stay steady, 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 whoosh. Steady, 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 whoosh. Mine was more of like a up, 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 down, up, 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 down. That was the way my stair step pattern kind of looked when I was, you know, tracking my weight. I've actually started, have you seen me talk about my Shape-a scale that I just got?
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about, what is the go with?
Oh my God, I love it.
I love it.
Well, you know, I'm going through menopause now, so one of the worries that I've had is, oh my gosh, I'm going to gain all this weight and I'm not going to know because I'm not weighing, but I don't want to weigh myself because I don't want to get caught up in, you know, watching the numbers fluctuate because that really messes with my mind. And, you know, if I got on the scale and was up 5 pounds number wise, it would make me think diety thoughts. And I have been living since I threw away my scale in 2017 with no diety thoughts. I don't want to start getting them again. So there's a scale called the Shape-a scale that, one of my moderator friends actually told me about first, and it's a numberless scale. Now, you can set it so that it syncs with apps, and you can actually see your number if you want to, but I don't want to. I don't want to start getting into that number again. But you get on the Shape-a scale, and it was actually designed, I think he's a mathematics professor at Duke University. So this is a guy who knows his stuff. And so you get on the scale. It has a 10-day calibration period where you don't get any feedback at all. And then after the 10-day calibration period, you use it with an app. You get on the scale holding your app, your phone with your app open. It syncs with your app. And then after it's calibrated, it gives you a color every day. Now, the color does not fluctuate day to day based on what the daily fluctuations. So like if I got on this morning and my weight was up over yesterday, it wouldn't give me a color showing it was up. It only shows you statistically what your overall trend is doing. So my goal as someone in maintenance would be to see the color green. Green is the color of maintenance within your range. So if I get on the scale and look at my app and it's green, that would show maintaining weight. And that would be what I would want. Whereas, you know, someone else might be in the weight loss stage where they would want to see teal or blue. So even if my weight fluctuated upward, it's not going to show me, you know, the gray color that you get from gaining weight. It's only going to show me those colors if my trend is up. You know, it statistically knows what's happening. So I'm really, really excited because I'm not going to have to worry anymore about trying on my Honesty pants. Are they going to fit? Am I going to be able to, you know, no, I'm just going to get on my scale, look for that color. And it actually works with body composition. So not just your weight. So if I were to put on muscle and lose fat, it wouldn't give me the bad color, you know, that just the number would. You know, if I gained 5 pounds of muscle and lost 3 pounds of fat, my weight would be up, but my body composition would be better. So I would get, you know, one of those colors like the teal or the blue. So that's what's so exciting. I've completely been able to disconnect from a number while still getting feedback of knowing exactly what my body composition trend is doing. And actually, I got it at the same time that I experimented with my month of no alcohol. So my weight trend has actually been very slowly going down, which is good because even though I've been wearing all the same clothes, I think I had a little menopausal fat creep, just a little, plus the pandemic and the stress of that. So yeah. I'm noticing my honesty pants are fitting better again. So that's really exciting.
That's good that you touched on the pandemic, Jen. I noticed in the groups there's a fair few people and even some experienced people that have been struggling, and
right.
it's been a real challenge for them with some regain and the whole thing, and the whole year has been pretty challenging. But have you got any words of wisdom about how people can stay on track and some coping mechanisms?
Yes. And the first is give yourself some grace. You know, I've been in the intermittent fasting community dipping in as early as 2009, but, you know, with the support groups since 2014 and in my own group since 2015. And we have never seen people who have been maintaining for a long time and then all of a sudden, boom, weight suddenly going up until now. And it's stress, the stress of the pandemic. You know, people were suddenly at home. They weren't able to go to the gym. They weren't walking around. You know, I talked about, you know, when I was a teacher and I was very active, you know, I'm now retired and I'm at home. So I've had to, you know, learn how to be more active at home. And I think that was a big thing for a lot of people, but just stress in general. You know, say the word pandemic, your body goes, ah, you know, it's a stressful concept. We didn't know if we were going to have toilet paper, right?
Yeah.
We didn't know if the food supply was going to be disrupted. We were all pretty much in panic mode of uncertainty. And although the pandemic is continuing, we're now at the point where we're dealing with it. We're not so worried that, not as worried. I mean, I know we're still worried, but it's not like it was back in March and April. And so, stress is linked to weight gain. So even if you changed nothing about what you were eating and your activity levels, a sudden huge amount of stress could certainly cause your body to hold on to some pounds or to gain some weight, because we're you know, hormonally driven. And, you know, maybe you were craving comfort foods. I was baking oatmeal cookies. They were delicious. You know, oatmeal raisin cookies are my favorite. And I had a great recipe and I was baking them. And then I'm like, why am I baking all these cookies? Maybe that's not a good idea.
No.
And I was drinking more alcohol. You know, my husband was home. He wasn't working. So every day was cocktail day. And so I think I did put on a little weight, even though I wasn't weighing. I noticed in my honesty pants, I was a little fluffier. But I was like, okay, it's time for this to stop. And
yeah, it doesn't take
it's just
long
so
take.
Yeah, it does. It's not, I was never panicked at any time. My clothes, I never had to stop wearing my clothes, but I could just tell, you know.
Jen, one of the things I wanted to talk about before we wrap it up, I wanted to talk about share without fear and how we share with other people this great lifestyle. And I know, I can't imagine what it's like for you to have so many incubators, if you like, in the group that have gone on to write books and do coaching and mentoring and all sorts of things. And I've got some exciting news to share, Jen. I've just recently finished my own book and it's about a month away from being out.
I'm so excited. Are you self-publishing or are you working with a publisher?
No, self-publishing, and some process in itself. But yeah, I know, you know, there's a few traps and pitfalls, but I'm working through that. And so, yeah, and it's more about, not so much about how to intermittent fast, but about my journey and how I overcame the sugar and fast food addiction and moved into intermittent fasting, a lot about mindset and a lot about dealing with negativity and also about post-obesity. And that's one of the things I've found quite challenging, is dealing with how I'm treated now. I'm not obese compared to when I was obese. I'm still adjusting to that, and I find that quite tricky.
Okay. You know, you talked about share without fear. And really, when people come on my podcast, they're sharing their journey with the world right there. And there's a lot of vulnerability, like I'm sure you're finding with telling your story in a book form. But
yeah, it's quite an
for
emotional
me, time. Yeah, writing my first book and putting it out there to the world. Look at all these crazy things that I did. You know, I injected myself with HCG. I did these crazy diets and all these things along the way. Don't do what I did, you know, back in the struggle years before intermittent fasting. And thank goodness I'll never would do those crazy things again. And I hope to prevent everyone else from doing it. But sharing without fear is important because, you know, there's one meme and I really hate it. And I don't use the word hate very much, but I hate this meme. I know you've seen it. It someone has taken the picture of Dr. Jason Fung, who I love and admire, and they're like, the first rule of Fast Club is not to talk about Fast Club. You know, it's from the movie Fight Club. And I hate that mindset because it propagates the idea that what we're doing is wrong, shameful, and must be hidden. And it's the opposite of that. You know, what if I hadn't told anybody about intermittent fasting and I'd kept it a secret? I mean, I'm not so, you know, such an egomaniac that I feel like no one would have heard about intermittent fasting other than for me. Of course, that's not true. People would have heard about it because it's so science-based. But I do think that the way that I've shared it and presented it has reached people in a way that perhaps some of the books written by doctors don't. You know, the people who have not struggled with their weight and they're like, hi, I'm a doctor, do intermittent fasting. I've never struggled with my weight, but it's fabulous. You know, they don't understand it from the same way you or I do.
No, well, what you did, Jen, you made it simple. And that's why when I got hold of Delay, Don't Deny, and I'm not a great avid book reader myself. And when I read that book, it was so easy to understand and it was so simple. And I thought, this is going to be so easy to implement in the practice of it. And I just found that whole book just so easy read as Fast Feast Repeat. You have such a great way of writing. And
it's true. And so I would like to encourage everyone to share without fear because what you're doing is not shameful. It's science-based. What really helped is at the end of 2019, Dr. Mark Mattson, he's a researcher from Johns Hopkins, he had a journal article. It was a review article explaining all the health benefits of intermittent fasting in the New England Journal of Medicine, which is, you know, the premier medical journal out there. So once intermittent fasting was in the New England Journal of Medicine and presented in such a positive light by such a renowned researcher as Dr. Mark Mattson, suddenly the medical community was more informed about it, and it was all over the television, you know, and then all of a sudden, instead of just talking about weight, people were talking about the health benefits. You know, I've been saying it for years, intermittent fasting is the health plan with the side effect of weight loss. But thinking about intermittent fasting as a healthy way to live your life, you know, for longevity and for vibrant health, for aging well, that's, you know, I'm 51, I'm almost on the other side of menopause now, and you know, I want to age well. I want to maintain my muscle mass. I want to, you know, maintain my bone density. And intermittent fasting is going to help me do that. And so even if, you know, it wasn't the amazing weight loss, this is a healthy way to live. So you can share without fear because you know, anyone who's living this lifestyle, you're in on, you know, what is not a secret anymore. And we don't want to keep it a secret. No. You know, educate everybody. If you get pushback, all that means is that person is not well informed. You know, even if a doctor gives you pushback, say, hey, you know, how about check out the December edition of the New England Journal of Medicine and then let's talk about it. You know, don't accept pushback from anybody and just say, read this and then we'll talk.
Yeah, I think that study you're talking about, that's the one about intermittent fasting and aging and in the journal?
Well, it's not a study. It's basically a review article where he took all the research out there and synthesized it and then presented it. And the audience of that journal article is doctors, right? It's the New England Journal of Medicine. So he wrote it for doctors. So doctors would understand, this is what we know about intermittent fasting. This is the research. I mean, that the references section of that article in the New England Journal of Medicine, it's a treasure trove of other studies. So if you're like me, I like to read something in a journal, then look at the reference section of that journal article, then dig into those. I like to go down that rabbit hole and see what the studies say for myself. But you know, the science is solid.
Yeah, I reckon. Also, Jen, you wrote that blog, remember, about IF becoming mainstream. When was that?
Yeah.
2016, 2017, you wrote that blog?
I wrote one in 2016, 2017, I definitely did, 2018, 20, every year. When the new year comes around, I like to write a new blog post to give people something to share. So really, I think every year since, I think I've written four different, it's the new year, here's my blog post about intermittent fasting. And, you know, the whole idea of just sharing, you just never know when you're going to plant the seed. Even if somebody ridicules you and says, oh, you're starving yourself, blah, blah, blah. You know, even if someone ridicules you, you've planted the seed and they're going to watch you. And, you know, nobody got more interested in intermittent fasting than the people who saw me transform. And suddenly a year or two later, they're like, all right, I'm ready. Tell me about it.
Yeah. Well, I had four friends have a weight loss intervention one day, and they were so concerned and they were really getting stuck into me, Jen. And funny enough, two of those friends are now doing intermittent fasting.
Oh, yeah.
So, Jen, we're going to wrap it up in a minute. I know your time's precious, but what final words of motivation, if there's somebody out there and they're struggling, and my suggestion is to run out and get Fast Feast Repeat because you'll never regret it. But if I'm sitting there and I'm obese and I'm struggling and I'm lost, what can you tell someone to get started?
Well, first I would like to say, you know, honor your body where it is today and know that health is a process. With intermittent fasting, you know, you're going to start to feel better in a few weeks, maybe not day one, because your body's going to have to learn to do something new. So I want people to go into it. You know, this is not like, quote, diets that you've done before, where you start on day one, you drop a ton of weight right away, but then over time it gets harder and harder and harder to stick to. You feel worse and worse and worse. And then eventually you fall off the wagon and regain all the weight plus more. This is actually going to be the opposite of that. It's going to be hard when you first start because your body is learning to do something new. There's an adjustment period. Your body has to learn how to tap into your fat stores. Read Fast, Feast, Repeat. Understand the clean fast. I'm not going to really get into that today, but the clean fast is where the magic happens. Don't go to YouTube and watch those YouTube vloggers telling you what you can and can't have during the fast, because a lot of them are going to steer you wrong. You know, having a little of this and a little of that and this. No. Fast clean, plain water, black coffee, plain tea. Don't look for a video that's going to tell you you can put, you know, butter in your coffee. Does butter sound like fasting to you, Graham?
Nope.
Not to me. So read about the clean fast and Fast, Feast, Repeat. Let your body adjust. Do not expect weight loss at first. Like I said, this is the opposite of what you've done before. You might even gain a little weight as your body is adjusting. I know that sounds crazy, but you know, fast, clean, let your body adjust, release expectations. Once you start getting into the groove of intermittent fasting, you're going to tune into your body. You're going to learn what feels right. Graham, you have learned that sugar and fast food and alcohol don't work well for your body.
Exactly.
And I've learned the same thing over time, and I want to feel good.
Yeah.
But you don't change everything overnight. I don't want someone to start intermittent fasting and change everything they're eating. And I mean, no. Let your body adjust. Fast, clean, release expectations. Let your body learn how to do this new thing. And, you know, I want you to tell yourself you're going to do this for a year.
And you don't have to know everything at the beginning, Jen.
Right, right.
Anyway.
You know, go to Fast, Feast, Repeat. Read the 28-day fast start. Start there. Then you can go back to the beginning and read from page one and learn what's happening behind the scenes. And then, you know, you'll tweak it over time, tweak it till it's easy, I like to say, and you'll find the right lifestyle within the intermittent fasting toolbox that works for you.
Jen, this has been fantastic. And thank you so much for your time. I can't tell you what a pleasure it is to talk to you about this. And you've given me the motivation to share my journey, not only in this podcast, but in my book that's coming out. And you've always been supportive of me right through this past 2.5 years. And it's really been a struggle for me to sit here and not break down, because you are the person that changed my life. And I said to my wife, How do you sit there and talk to somebody that changed your life for an hour without breaking down over it? And I just wanted to thank you from the bottom of my heart and on behalf of everybody. And Jin, you have seriously saved thousands of lives, and you should be very, very proud of yourself. And I hope one day I'm driving through your home state on the Fasting Highway and I come across a bronze statue of Jin Stevens, because you are truly a gem. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Graham. And it's been an honor to be on your podcast. And I can't wait to see your book.
Well, thanks very much, Jin. We'll talk soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow. Thank you so much, Jin. That was fantastic. It's so good to hear about your new book, Fast Feast Repeat, and all the success that you're having, which I'm sure everyone will agree is thoroughly deserved. So next week, guys, on the Fasting Highway, we're going to be talking to John Jerry Saunders Jr. from Columbus, Ohio. And the theme of the show is going to be about mindset. And JJ has been doing intermittent fasting for some 6 years now, so he can offer some real insights on what it's like to live a long-term intermittent fasting lifestyle. And one of his strengths is around mindset and why that is so important with intermittent fasting. So join us here next week. And until then, be safe. And thank you so much for being here today.